From the Professional Disc Golf Association, this is PDGA Radio News.
1 year and 1 week to the date of his first career signature win, James Conrad added yet another signature win to his resume this weekend at the MVP Open, taking down the win at Maple Hill alongside Sarah Hokum in the Open Women's Division, and that's where we are going to be spending most of our time today on PDGA Radio. I'm Steve Hill, and I'm joined, as always, by my co-host, Sarah Lamberson. Sarah, how you doing today?
I'm doing pretty good. I'm actually in Greenville, South Carolina, for work.
Very nice.
So, well, you are different locale.
Yeah, gallivanting around the country, and next week we will be in Vermont. Holy cow.
I know. I'm so excited.
I am too. It's going to be fun. We will talk a little bit more about Worlds later, but biggest stories we got to talk about are from the MVP Open. My goodness, this tournament was just like, was it just me, Sarah, or was this thing kind of a roller coaster? Like, three rounds of just like crazy scoring and intensity and weird kicks for people and stuff, and I guess that's what you get in the woods.
Yeah, I was gonna say that's kind of seems like that course, but for Ricky Wysocki, it was definitely a roller coaster, unfortunately.
Oh yeah, Ricky, even Nate Sexton to a degree rode the roller coaster a little bit, and
Paige Pierce, a little bit of a roller coaster. Yeah,
a lot to talk about. So let's start with James Conrad. He had a comeback win. I think he was in fourth starting out the round yesterday and shot a 1098 rated final round, highest round of his career. All of his rounds above the 1080s, I believe, have been this year. He played phenomenally yesterday.
He did.
And even the times when he wasn't clean, he was able to scramble well. I kind of felt like something special was going to happen with, I don't want to say something special, but like I kind of felt like things were going James Conrad's way when, like, on hole two, he ends up in that like thicket of trees off to the left of the basket, short and left of the basket. And James Conrad, generally just backhand guy, doesn't really throw a lot of forehands unless it's to get out of trouble or things like that. And he was in trouble here, and so he kind of threw, like, this overhand. It wasn't even forehand. It was like an overhand, you know, roller with his putter. And just basically put it right next to the basket to save his three. And I was like, okay, things are going to maybe go James Conrad's way. And then hole three, he comes up, takes a lone birdie on the card. Ricky, like, double bogeys. And so there's a huge swing there. Takes a stroke on Paul McBeth and Calvin Heiberg, and then just off to the races, was draining putts, but just for whatever reason, you get James Conrad into the woods, and he's a happy man.
He's super comfortable. I'm just looking at his stats, though. So he was first in birdies. He had 50% birdies.
That's bananas.
Think about
that course.
Think about that for a second. At any course.
I think he didn't have a bogey. Did he go bogey free second round? I think he went bogey free second round.
Yes, he did. Yep.
And so he went from like hole 18 of round one to hole 14 of round three without any bogeys.
I know.
Which is so hard to do at that course.
Yeah. You know, his putting was really good, but he was in 60th place for circle one putts.
Yeah, but where was he for circle two?
Third place. So
there you go.
Yeah. He was making some massive putts.
Yeah, and I mean, that's what he did there last year, too. I had a chance to talk to him today. We didn't record it for the podcast or anything because we had a couple other interviews lined up and he was on the road and everything. But, I called the chat with him and just see how things were going. And, like, the thing that I was really interested to talk with him about is, like he's feeling good going into Worlds now.
Oh, yeah.
And, I mean, James Conrad's kind of been, like, we talked about him at the end of last year on the podcast I used to do about, you know, he was one of these breakout guys, and you know, you think he's going to be a real big contender. He's got all the tools. He can throw a mile. He putts really well like he was this weekend. But early half of the season, just for whatever reason, you get him out in the open stuff, and even though he can throw so far, like if there's not a line for him to visualize, and I've talked with him about this a little bit too, he just doesn't do as well when it's visualizing a landing zone instead of a line to hit.
Yeah, so like, I get that.
Yeah, and so early in the year at some, you know, at your Las Vegas and your GBO and places like that, he maybe doesn't show as well as you expect, but I mean, he's peaking at the right time right now. You know, he said he feels real confident. Basically, the courses in Vermont, you know, are are just as challenging, if not maybe slightly less challenging than Maple Hill. So he's feeling good about that. And just being able to hold off Paul McBeth again, as he did last year at Idlewild, is, just gives you a ton of confidence.
Well, that and his mental. So I was actually driving home or driving to Greenville from a tournament yesterday, but I caught a few of the final holes, and, you know, it was a nail biter because on hole 18, you know, they stretched the tee back. They've got this uphill tunnel shot through the woods out into the open. And then your approach shot to the green on 18 is so nerve wracking. You've got hundreds of people sitting there. You've got the OB wall, low ceiling, the whole bit. And Paul McBeth had to throw that weird kind of Anheuser shot around the trees over a truck. Did you see that?
No, I missed the over like, the truck
yeah,
part.
Yeah, he had to throw over the OB.
Oh my
just
gosh.
Where his stance was terrible. And he had to throw over the OB, which is where the parking lot was, over a truck. And then it kind of came down to Conrad having to make this somewhat sketchy approach shot to the green just to lay up and take his par. And he was able to do that very well. But still, I mean, just the fact that that green is surrounded by such close OB did not make it a drop in the can. So
no, not at all. And I think going
so awesome to see him just have so much confidence that he could stick with his mental game and see it through.
Well, I think this was something really interesting that he told me, and that I was actually a little bit surprised to hear from him, because he doesn't, I mean, I don't know. I haven't talked to James as much as I've talked to some other players over the years, so I don't know him quite as well, but as I've gotten to, you know, talk to him more often, I can learn a little bit more. And like, this was one of those times where, you know, I talked to him about hole 14. It's that one over the water where the basket's just on the edge of the water. And it was funny on the live commentary, Terry and Dixon were talking about how, you know, James doesn't really need to go for this one. All the other guys are, but James can probably just lay up, dump out left. He went for that thing.
Oh yeah.
Ended up left of it. So he's facing a death putt, and he went for the death putt still.
Yep.
And it clanged off of the cage and went into the water. And it was a really rough break, and really just kind of one of those times of the round where you thought, oh no, maybe this isn't going to go James's way. Cause I mean, McBeth, I think the hole before that had just thrown in from like 115 feet or something like that. It was nuts. Yeah, it was the hole right before that. And so like all the momentum's starting to shift a little bit. And I asked James about that, and he's like, yeah, I never really considered laying that putt up. Like I've made two putts like that earlier in the round, and like I didn't want to show any sign of weakness. And I thought that part when he said that to me, I was like, okay.
Like, yeah, like he's come
James,
to play.
James Conrad's a gamer, like, and I knew that, but like he's kind of hard to read. I mean, he's just a pretty chill, like friendly guy, and it's hard sometimes to really know, like he doesn't show a lot of
open competition.
He doesn't show a lot of like outward fire on the course. Yeah. You know what I mean? Like you got guys like Paul who will slap his leg when he does something bad, or like Ricky snatches at his mini when he makes bad putt, or like even when he does something that looks great but he thought should have been perfect, you know, like he gets real fired up. James Conrad's just kind of a calm collector, and so like it was just interesting to hear that. So I mean he's feeling great going into Worlds. I think it's gonna be super exciting. You know, I could see realistically like six different contenders for Worlds right now, but we'll get to that in a minute. Because before we go more on the MPO side, let's switch over to FPO and talk about Sarah Hokum, who we also need to start talking about as a contender for Worlds, because she's playing out of her mind.
I know. So she shot 11 down. She won by 7 strokes over Paige Bjerkus, who we'll get to in a second. She shot 985 average over the weekend, which is just...
That is insane at Maple.
It's insane. It's insane anywhere for any female to be that consistent. I mean, that was almost 25 points above her rating.
I'd be curious. I should have done a little more research before the show, but I'll try and go back and look and see, like, what's the average rating been at Maple Hill over the years of the winner?
Oh, yeah, that would be cool.
I'm wondering.
Interesting. And Smuggler's Notch.
Oh, yeah, we'll do that for next week.
Yeah. So just looking at her stats, she was first in parked, first in scramble, first in circle one putts, first in circle two regulation, first in fairway hits. Like, come
That's
on.
the big one. Fairway hits. I mean, you got to be clean at that course.
Yeah. Well, first in fairway hits. And then when she wasn't on the fairway, she was also first in scrambling. So that's amazing. Her circle two putts were lacking a little bit. 14th. And
yeah, only 8%. She only hit one of those.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
And then she was second place in all the other things. So she basically just played.
She dominated.
She just played super consistent. I caught a little bit of their rounds and she just played like boring golf. Just nothing. She didn't go for anything crazy. She just put it in the fairway, made her putts, moved on. Nothing. She didn't have to go for anything extreme because she had a pretty big lead in the final round. There are several women that were making a push toward the end, but she just stayed calm and did Sarah Hokum things and won by 7 strokes.
Yeah, some interesting insights from her over at UltiWorld Disc Golf. They had a good recap article, and she kind of said, I was pretty sure Paige Pierce was going to come back and give me a run for my money from the second card. And so because of that, she was going for it the final round. And that's where you get that super hot final round. What was her final round rating?
Her final round was 995 or 994. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean,
I know.
That's pretty good.
She just keeps getting better and better. Yeah.
At this point.
Oh, so I was going to say.
Yeah. Yeah.
So I was going to say Paige Bjorkis again, like she just, is this her best finish at a disc golf pro tour event? I haven't looked. I need to look.
I think she may be tied for second at Utah.
Okay. Yeah, that sounds right. But she's just playing phenomenally too. Like she shot, so it was par 61. She shot 61, 58.
She also came
60.
In second in Great Lakes.
Okay. Okay. So she's just, for someone who was not full time on tour until the beginning of the summer, she's shooting lights out and just.
Yeah.
I mean, she beat Lisa Fakus by 4 strokes, Rebecca Cox. I mean, she beat Paige Pierce by 8 strokes. I mean, she's a huge contender for Worlds. I'm just amazed.
She beat Katrina Allen by 11.
I know. I'm like happy and amazed. She's an awesome person. I love her family. And it's just so cool to see a young person just do this without a whole lot of thought. It was like, oh, I'm going to go out on tour. And she kills it. And she's like, oh, I'm just going to stay out on tour.
Yeah.
It's just crazy.
Take advantage of it while you can.
Cinderella story. Really. I mean, she's been playing since she was a tiny child, but
sure,
she's amazing. I'm impressed.
She had 0 OBs. No, 1 OB. Sorry. 1 OB the whole tournament.
Oh my gosh.
That's pretty good.
That's very good.
And it came in the first round. She had no OBs the final 2 rounds.
Oh my gosh. Yeah, and she was first in birdies. She was 35% in birdies and first in circle one regulation.
Yep.
So, man, it's not just the cat and pay. I mean, just like we talk about it being the Macbeth and Wysocki show for a couple years there, it used to be the Paige and Cat show, and they were always battling each other, but now there's Hokum and
I love it.
Little Paige and Lisa and Rebecca and all these other women. So,
yeah.
Very exciting.
What give me your other three big observations. Well, I guess Paige was one of them. But
yeah,
do you have
so
any
Paige
other big observations from the FPO side before we switch back to NPO?
So the other Paige. So
oh, you're relegating her to other Paige now? Wow. You're really down on Paige Pierce
about,
right now,
we talked
Sarah.
About the no,
I'm joking.
About... So double P. So I'm a little bit sad because I obviously picked her to win. We'll get to that. My
she'd
sadness
won
about our
she'd won
picks.
It quite a few years in a row. You were
3 years in a row.
It was 4, wasn't it? It was
4.
Yeah, she
okay,
was going
4 years
for 5 in a row.
So I had some hope because she was tied after the first round with Hokum, and then she fell off the pace and she shot plus 5, a 66, her round 2. And if that were me shooting that, I wouldn't be too upset. But, okay, well, it was a 904, so I might be a little bit upset. But that was way below her rating.
Yeah.
She was not
she
happy
really
with
struggled.
That. Yeah. And I'm just looking at her stats. She went OB. She was 9th in OB rate, so went OB probably more than she would have liked. Her circle one putts have really been struggling lately, and that continue to be true this event. She only got 84% of her circle one putts.
Yeah.
Circle two was kind of lacking. And then she was off the fairway quite a bit too. She was 15th in fairway hits. And that's very unlike her.
Yeah, so I think if at this course, like if any little thing is off, you know what I mean? It's just so much. I feel like it's so much more punitive there than at some other places.
Yeah, and like we talked about after. Go ahead.
Go ahead. No, well, I was gonna say the putting. I mean, round one alone, 77% circle one. It on the positive though, if we do want to take some positives from Paige's performance, she did trend upwards. She went 77, 85, 90. In the circle one putting.
Yeah.
So there, I think, is some cause for, hope, if you will.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, well, I was going to say about the fairway hits, as we talked about after I played Idlewild, on a super wooded course, it's kind of just up to whoever is scoring on U-Disc to determine what's fairway and what's not. Because there may be, like, on these holes where all these tiny trees are.
Spoken like someone who missed a lot of fairways.
No.
Just kidding.
No.
Feeling but you never. Today, sorry. I mean, one person's fairway can be another person's off the fairway, depending on the lines and stuff. Yeah.
Yeah. Like in the woods, what is the fairway?
Yeah, I mean, there was a brief discussion about that, I think, on Facebook that I saw recently about how U-Disc kind of determines that. And I think they go for like the intended landing zone. But when there's multiple lines through the woods, it's kind of in the eye of the beholder. So
exactly.
Even then, though, I think what you really take from Paige's performance is that, look, this is the second time in a row she came outside the top three, which, like, in a generally smaller field, smaller division, that's significant.
I know.
Do you know, Sarah, the last time that she finished outside the top three in back-to-back events? Would you like to take a guess?
Is it a year or is it a month?
Give me a year.
2014.
Keep going back.
Oh my gosh, 2012.
11.
What?
She has not finished outside the top three in back-to-back events since 2011.
Do you think she knows that?
I don't know.
Probably not. I don't know. I don't know who keeps track of metrics like that.
Well, I was just curious. I just went back and looked because it just seemed odd to me, like, we've seen so much consistency out of her, even in the like semi-off years for her,
yeah.
You know, like 2016 when she was kind of having sponsor issues and stuff like that. Like she was still, she never saddled up that many back-to-back, outside top three. So fifth at Ledgestone, sixth here. We will see what happens with her at Worlds. It's going to be interesting.
I know. And then just a couple other shout outs. So Holly Finley had an amazing round, the last round. She tied for the hot round with Hokum. That was awesome. So she climbed up the leaderboard the last round. Shout out to my friend Haley Child. She ended up in the top 10, finishing eighth at plus six, cashed. That was amazing. And then who else? Oh, and Weiss made, I think she moved up five spots in the final day. So she had a really good final round too. But she also finished outside of top 10. So she had a couple difficult first and second rounds. So
yeah,
those are my highlights. It was very exciting though. Yeah.
This is a super fun event. Like the three rounds, like, almost felt chaotic. Like I can see why it was four rounds before, because like you almost need four rounds to set, not to take anything away from who won, but I mean the separation, at least on the MPO side, was really slim.
Mm-hmm.
Until later. I mean, you had, I guess, first to fifth, you had eight strokes because Conrad pulled away. But like going into the final round, it was much tighter than that.
A couple other things.
We haven't even talked about Riki Wysocki's 11:08 rated second round, which was
right.
He went 13 down, aced hole eight, hit some putts, and that came after a really uncharacteristic showing for him. The day before round one, he was in 30th place and went all the way up to first.
Yeah.
In one round, which is just astonishing. And you're thinking, oh, well, Ricky's on fire. He's trending upward. He's got this one in the bag. And then yesterday, struggled again.
I know.
And really, like, he's a player who rides on momentum so much. And it's just, you know, early. It seems really what's been bugging him is if something goes off the rails early, he hasn't necessarily recovered well. He said on during round one, he got a bogey, or I think it was bogey or double bogey. Let me double check. On hole two, he went OB there, and really that's a hole that he shouldn't come out. He doubled. He shouldn't come up with a double on that. And then you see the same thing yesterday, round three, he double bogeys that one and just had a hard time getting it together after that. So it's going to be, I mean, it's just really creating a lot of parity right now in the sport, which is a lot of fun. But yeah, he aced hole eight, tremendous showing. Trevor Harbolt also aced hole eight, very aceable hole, which is just a fun one over the water to watch. Mm-hmm. But Ricky with the 11-08 sandwich, like, the rest of his rounds were like way below his rating, 10-19 and 10-05. So I don't know. I mean, if he's got to right the ship, I think, a little bit in between now and Worlds, just to kind of find a little more consistency. Couple other things from the men's division. Calvin Heimberg, super fun to watch.
I know.
Really, really powerful. A lot of poise. He's only 23. He's from Florida.
I didn't realize he was that old. I guess
I thought he was younger too, actually.
Yeah. I've been crossing paths with him for the past several years at some Southern events, and I thought he was like still a teenager.
He can mash.
I know.
He throws really far. But the biggest thing with him, he was number one in fairway hits and tied for fourth in OB rate, and that was the second lowest OB rate out of the field. So those are going to be a couple stats that are going to get you to the top of the leaderboard at Maple Hill. He was only 89% in circle one. So if he can clean up a couple of those things, I think we can see him contend more. He's had a pretty, solid season. I want to say, he was 11th at Ledgestone, 7th at Idlewild. So last couple events, you know, a lot of first place finishes down in Florida. So he's definitely a name to keep an eye out for as we round into this latter half of the season.
Yeah.
So always nice to see some new people up there getting a little screen time. In addition to Ricky Wysocki, Nate Sexton kind of went roller coastery. Nice first round. Second round, hold on, I'm blanking. He was right up there, and then really just the final round couldn't get anything going. Only one under for the final. That was a little disappointing. I was kind of wondering if Sexton could pull together a little back-to-back disc golf pro tour victories. That would have been huge.
That would have been.
But really, with him, there's just nothing. He even said, like, just pretty standard Maple Hill the first round. Didn't hit very many trees. And then from there, it seems like he got a little more off the fairway.
Mm-hmm.
So, and then here's my question, Sarah. You had Simon Lazat came in fifth. Eagle McMahon tied for eighth. Were you surprised by either of those showings?
Yes. Well, I picked Eagle to win, if you remember.
Right.
I wouldn't think of Eagle. When I think of playing in the woods, really difficult courses, I guess I don't think of Simon and Eagle as being like woods players.
Sure.
Like I would with Conrad or like MJ or someone like that. But just with the momentum and the poise that we've seen with Eagle, especially this year, I thought that he'd be able to take it. So I guess I was a little bit surprised. And then Simon finished fifth, so it wasn't
tied for fifth,
terrible.
Yeah.
Tied for fifth, yeah. So
I'm actually less concerned about Eagle's eighth place than I am about Simon's fifth place.
Why is that?
Well, here's why. Eagle, again, like I don't know. Trends are important to me in terms of how things are going. Eagle trended upward the whole time.
Mm-hmm.
Comes back first tournament after Canapés Day, so he like a month off.
Yeah.
Shoots 10-19, but then goes 10-44, 10-67. So trended upward the whole weekend. Jumped up, I think, like, how many spots? 11 spots on Sunday to get into the top 10. So good upward trend there. Simon only climbed up one spot on Sunday, still got in top five. So not bad by any stretch, but, 10-27, 10-68, 10-44, a little inconsistent on what really is his home course. We talked about it with him last week, a home course advantage. So I don't know. I shouldn't say I'm worried about Simon, but I actually feel okay about Eagle's performance. Like,
yeah,
I could see how some people might be like, oh, well, Eagle's not going to win Worlds now because he only came in eighth place at Maple Hill. But
I still wouldn't write him off.
No.
But both of them, I think the thing that does surprise me is that they were both so far off the lead. So Eagle finished 13 down, Simon finished 14 down. And that was 8 and 9 off of the lead. So that's pretty substantial.
That is substantial. And that's why I was kind of trying to look at where they were trending with the ratings and everything.
Yeah.
So I don't know. I think 1067 for Eagle final round is pretty good. And Simon had his 1068 second round. So it'll be, I don't know. We'll see. It's Worlds is going to be fun. And then, you know, quick shout outs to Greg Barsby and Paul Uleberry sneaking into the top five. Like,
oh yeah,
I feel like we haven't talked about them quite as much lately, but Barsby always seems to play really well at Maple Hill. And one final shout out, Sarah, since we've been in shout out mode, we need to give some love to Mark Verrocki. He's the pond diver at Maple Hill. Actually, he's local to my area. He lives out in North County, San Diego. He's got like a 9-hole disc golf course on his property. He runs a local A tier, the Daniel Bowe Memorial, which we spoke about earlier this season.
Yeah,
just all around good dude, and he just flies back out there every year. He grew up on the East Coast. Flies out there every year still and goes and dives in the pond all weekend to retrieve
it's
people's
so
discs.
Funny.
It's great.
I love it. Yeah.
I think he puts the MVP in MVP Open, I think. Because, I mean, he's saving there we go. Steve Dodge, you can have that
Point
one.
It.
I'll give it to you for free. I mean, it's just such a cool thing to see him out there every year, and really neat that he takes his own time and energy to do that.
For sure.
So wanted to give him a little shout out, especially because he's a local guy. He's like a disc golf celebrity, I think. Like, we need to do an article on him. We should have him on the podcast. Maybe we'll do that before next year's Maple Hill.
I want to know how wrinkly he gets. Like,
well,
how?
I mean,
what stretch of time does he stay in that water?
Yeah. I mean,
and what kind of creatures has he met?
Or what kind of creatures have hitched a ride on him? Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean,
yeah.
I think he wears a wetsuit in certain weather.
Okay. Okay.
I mean, obviously, I haven't heard of him getting any like terrible illnesses afterwards. So the water must be clean enough.
Hopefully.
So yeah, good for Mark. Good for the Maple Hill Open.
Yeah.
Or the MVP Open as it is now. Let's do hot rounds, Sarah. Let's start on the women's side. Let's go for it.
All right, here we go. So as we mentioned, Sarah Hokum shot a 994. That was the hottest round of the weekend at the MVP Open, and that was her third round to finish first. Oh, and Holly Finley also shot a 994 that third round, and she finished fifth. Congratulations. That is super
pretty tremendous.
Hot. Yeah. Paige Pierce had the second hottest round, her first round at a 977 to finish sixth at the MVP Open. Same event, Paige Bjorkis shot a 975, her second round, and she finished second. Also tied with that was Kona Painis, who shot a 975, her second round. She finished 15th.
Yeah, that was her bright spot.
Other
rounds weren't quite as hot.
A little bit of a roller coaster for her.
Yeah.
Also tied with that 975. Man.
I know, a lot of ties.
So many
this
high
week.
Ratings. Yeah. Was Nicole Bradley. She's hit our hot round leaderboard a couple times now.
Recently,
super hot rounds.
Too, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. She played the Sierra College Pro-Am driven by Innova, and that was her first round. She finished first. Congratulations, Nicole. Tied for the fourth hottest round was Jessica Weiss and Lisa Fakus at the MVP Open. They shot a 967 third round. Jessica finished 11th. Lisa finished third. And the fifth hottest round was shot by Rebecca Cox and Katrina Allen. They shot 960 their first round and finished fourth and ninth, respectively, at the MVP Open.
All right.
So pretty cool. What about the men's side?
Men's side, well, we talked about two of them. Reiki Wasaki, 1108, round two, hottest round of the weekend. I believe that's his seventh career round over 1100. I can't imagine that one won't stand. I also think it was also second best all time at Maple Hill, behind Paul McBeth's like 21 or something like that back in I don't remember the year. I'd have to look. 2013, 2014. Either way, very, very hot round, but he slumped down to an 8th place tie. So, you know, a bright spot, but unfortunately couldn't hold on till the end. The guy who did hold on to the end saved his best round for the last. That was James Conrad's 1098 rated 3rd round for the win. Kevin Jones came in with a 1076 rated 2nd round, as did Cam Colglazer. Kevin tied for 22nd, and Cam Colglazer tied for 13th. Paul McBeth's final round was rated at 1075 on the way to his 2nd place showing. And the 5th hottest round of the weekend was from Nico LoCastro, his 1073 rated 1st round. I believe that was his highest rated round of the season. I think those were even better than his Las Vegas Challenge rounds early in the year, and he tied for 8th place. So
awesome.
Pretty good rounds. Sarah, I think for the most part that we're gonna put a bow on Maple Hill. I think maybe we'll revisit a little bit of stuff next week, but we have a little bit more show to get to. So we're gonna take a break, and then when we come back, we're gonna go back to back interviews. We're gonna be joined by Pro Masters World Champion Dave Fellberg. We couldn't catch up with him last week. We're going to this week. And then we're going to talk to a couple disc golfers who are setting up a tournament, multiple tournaments, out at Burning Man, Sarah. So
I cannot even imagine.
I can't either. But it sounds pretty cool. So we're going to have those. And then we'll come back and we're going to debut a new segment on the show. So we'll be back here in just a moment on PDJ Radio. All right, after a couple missed connections last week, we are joined on the show now by 2008 Open World Champion and now 2018 Masters World Champion Dave Fellberg. Dave, congratulations, and thanks for joining us on PDGA Radio.
Thanks, Steve. It's nice to be on the radio again, so it means I did something good.
Well, I mean, it's been 10 years, but how does it feel to be a world champion again?
You know, it feels pretty much the same. You know, like I had that same feeling with the chills up the arms, and I understand it's not, an open victory, but it still had that same meaning to me. You know, it was something I was trying to do. Like I said, last year, I thought I would just walk into the Masters division and get it. I didn't take it serious enough in Michigan. And this year I realized what it took to win, and I came with the goal and I accomplished it.
Very nice. What was the, it's a long week in Kansas City. It was August. The weather there was grueling. I mean, how important was endurance and physical conditioning there?
Well, you know, I didn't show up till Friday after driving 20 straight hours with no sleep. And luckily I had David Potts. He caddied for me and helped me out a lot, even in practice. And, you know, without him, I probably would have been in a lot of trouble. But with him carrying my bag and pushing my cart, getting me around the practice rounds and stuff like that, I was able to save my energy and just see the courses, twice each and, give it my best bid. But yeah, endurance is a huge factor. And, without a caddy out there, I think you're at a big disadvantage.
Were you running on just mass amounts of coffee and caffeine?
No, I don't do any caffeine or nothing like that. I just try to catch up my rest. My muscles were really sore after practicing Friday and, as I had doubles on Saturday and then practice on Sunday and then practice on Monday. So I was really, really sore and, almost out of shape. And I just got some good rest and I started feeling better through the middle of the week. And I was almost like the opposite of most people. I was sore in the beginning of the week and strong by the end. So
how's the body feeling? I mean, I know you've obviously come back from the neck surgery a couple years ago, but I'm sure that's not something that ever really goes away. How do you feel like your body's holding up, especially over, a whole season now?
It's funny is I still feel sore at night and stuff like that. And overall, I'm my body feels kind of stiff, but the neck feels good when I'm throwing. And, as soon as I get out there and I loosen up a little bit, it feels better. And I'm able to throw, and I'm in decent shape right now. So it's feeling pretty good. I feel lucky that the surgery went so well. I do have a lot of the pain I have is more, less disc golf, just regular pain driving or just, being in regular public and doing your regular day stuff. That really is where I feel a lot of the issues. But when, for throwing, it feels really well. So, really my major issue, the only thing that really bothers me anymore physically is, at the Tour Championship last year, I almost had to pull out, and I basically didn't finish, but I did finish with two double bogeys, to miss the tour championship, move on by one stroke, and that was because my finger, I like did something to the tendon in my finger, and it, you know, now I it bothers me if I don't really warm up or if I play for more than like a week, it's really sore. So it's gotten better, and I hopefully it'll, you know, not be a problem over the rest of my career. But yeah, feeling overall pretty healthy.
I was gonna say you've had a long career. You know, how difficult has it been to adjust maybe your mental game to where the physical capabilities might be? I don't want to use the word deteriorating, but obviously we all age. In terms of physical condition, has that been tough for you to adapt in terms of, hey, I think I should be able to do this, but my body isn't letting me?
I think the best way to put that for me was that I wasn't feeling old. You know, where I know that moment's coming. You know, I talked to all my friends. I didn't feel yet like, oh, I can't throw as good as I used to. I don't have the energy I used to, you know, but the surgery made me seem like that, you know? And so it was like right when I turned 40, you know, so everybody who knew me or watched me play figured, oh, he's running out of gas.
Yeah.
You know, and he started to deteriorate, but really it was just the surgery. Without the surgery, I feel great. I still think, you know, I still feel like I'm in my 30s. You know, I don't feel tired when I'm playing. I don't feel sore from throwing. And I wouldn't say my distance is hurt too much. I think that a lot of times I don't throw as far anymore as I've learned to. I don't need to. And I realize that if I throw at 80%, I won't miss my line at all. So I've gotten more confident in, you know, on a hole that I don't think I'm going to get, I might throw it short and just take the par. And so people think I don't have as much distance, but I'm choosing to do that. You know, it just makes my life easier for scoring. But I tell you that I don't think that I've lost much distance. And with the Latitude's new Ballista Pro Opto X that they, you know, put out, I feel like we have a disc now that I can throw as far as anything in the market, really. So.
You're going to need that younger feeling, I hear, because I hear you've got a baby on the way.
That's right. We do have a baby. Cindy and I are blessed. It's going to be born in late February.
Okay.
And, we'll find out that we're going to find out if it's a boy or a girl in a couple weeks. We're not going to make it a secret. We want to know.
Okay.
And we're totally excited for it. You know, it's a great opportunity in life. She's a great human. To have a woman as good as her to, you know, share a seed with and have her want to be with me for the rest of her life, marry me, and, you know, pass her genes on to mine. I'm a lucky guy, you know, so I'm really happy. And, you know, it's funny that, you know, baby Felberg, PDJ number 22626 lives. You know, that's back in the day when they let you have the numbers, and I've had it for, you know, almost a good 15 years. So, you know, if my child ever chooses to play, they'll always break a tie.
What's I was going to say,
across anybody with a lower PDJ number.
There you go. Do you have a preference? Do you want a boy or a girl, or does it matter?
I mean, I don't want to say that because I don't want to, you know, make my either one feel bad that you should have listened to this, you know, but of course, you know, I'm a male. I'd love to lean more towards a boy so I can, you know, do more male activities, but I'm sure having a girl is also a blessing. And I mean, you know, it's going to be a blessing either way, but it'd be great to have a boy so I can, you know, I'm a man's man, always have been. I'm not a, you know, so it'd be nice to be able to teach the things I do. But if it's a girl, Cynthia will, you know, make it very girly and teach it all the proper lady things. And
hey, you'll learn a lot. You'll learn a lot if you have a girl. Trust me. I can speak to that firsthand.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to it. You know, it's one experience. You only live life once. And if disc golf is all I had when I was old, you know, I think I would have felt empty. So I think, you know, having a family and Cynthia and a baby and have the history of disc golf, you know, I could have a much more fulfilling life, you know, and
yeah.
That's something I'm looking forward to because I don't have much family. My mom's in the home, you know, kind of needs help, can't really communicate. And my dad's not been around in years, no one's seen him. And I have a half brother and a half sister and no other real relatives. So, you know, it's nice to try to build my own family.
Oh, that's exciting, man. Congratulations. Is now, I mean, I guess the question that comes from that then is do you have plans for how having a family is going to impact the disc golf career? Are you gonna take a year off? Are you gonna be at home? Are you gonna choose your spots?
Well, I guarantee that the first, you know, right when the baby comes out, there's not gonna be much going on, but that, you know, at least for a couple months, there's no, hey, I'm gonna go play a tournament. That's not gonna fly, you know. But I think that overall, you know, my goal is to maintain the Next Generation tour and learn and try to get that going more from an office and not have to be so much in person. And then, you know, at the same time, I want to hit, like you said, hit my spots. I want to compete in the tournaments that matter, you know, because we're getting so many tournaments on the schedule that winning a tournament here and there, it's really just people are just playing for cash. They're not playing for pride. They're not playing for any kind of stats. Just, I want cash. Who's got the most cash? And so I'm going to probably start avoiding that kind of tournament and just start playing in tournaments that are more part of history, like major championships, pro tours, NTs. You know, basically the Climo schedule of the years past when he had his kid. You know, he was able to maintain a good 10 to 15 really quality tournaments and maintain rankings and ratings. And I think I should be able to do that. I think that that should be the goal of the older player. And, you know, it's not about a money chase. It's more about just enjoying it, seeing my friends and family, the disc golf family, when I can. And you know, maintaining that top ranking and rating for my sponsorships and people that follow me. And, you know, there's no reason to not show my skill while I still have it, you know. So I still want to show people I have it, but I don't need to go out there and grind for the dollar with all the young kids every weekend.
Gotcha. Now, what's speaking of the Next Gen Tour, what's the latest? Where are we at with the tour this year, and, wow, and how have things been coming along?
It's getting so big. We've increased the qualifiers by about 30 or 40 from last year, so we're up to like 170.
Wow.
Yep, we had them all the way across the United States again, including Alaska. We've added Europe. Europe's got its first 10 qualifiers. We're going to try to get some guys to come to the championship from Europe, and we're going to open Europe in full next year. We're even adding a couple in Australia right now as I speak, just giving them a couple samples, see if we get a couple guys to come over this year from Australia, and then we're going to open up Australia, New Zealand full next year with the Asia, you know, probably Japan and Taiwan and all that. And, you know, besides that, you know, we just had our fourth regional yesterday in Denver. David Baca, you know, claimed the travel stipend and the free trip. And Chris Moss and Ethan Boyd got their trips, you know, and they're coming. And basically, I'm on my way to Emporia this weekend for the fifth regional, which is being held in Emporia, Kansas. And then we got the Northeast coming up at Mapleton, Virginia. And then I got the Southeast in Huntsville at end of September. And then end of October, we got the one in Flagstaff. And then the national championship again in November at Fountain Hills. So we're about halfway through the regional premier qualifiers for the national, and we've probably got another 30 to 50 qualifiers out there. And, you know, the qualifier season this year doesn't end because I'm allowing the best rating performance outside of regionals to qualify based on their rating performances in their region. Their best performance top five get to go on to the nationals this year also. And I also did like a $25,000 added payout from Disc Golf Center online per region for free. So any division, it's a free payout, and you just show up to the PGA tournament. We'll keep track of your stats and pay you for the PGA standards. And then at the end of the year, you get a free payout from Disc Golf Center, our online partner, and any brands you want. So we're going to keep it going all the way through October 31st on the qualifiers and the national championship this year. You know, we upgraded to a Jeep.
I see that. Yeah.
Yeah. It should be big. You know, look at Chris Kessoff last year. He won the Kia and made that comeback. In his first tournament, he got second or third at the A tier in Phoenix, beating like top players like Drew Gipsu and stuff, shooting a 1080 final round.
Wow.
You know, so it's definitely producing quality players, and I've seen a lot of repeats from last year, people that are trying to get back in it. I've seen a lot of new faces with the addition of the divisions, and we had the PDGA helping us this year. So I think that it's growing. You know, we're going to be more competitors than last year, which after a hype first year like we had, to have a second sophomore year that even gets past the numbers and continues growth, I think that really shows something. So I'm expecting a big year three. We're going to be working a lot more with the Disc Golf Pro Tour. I can't tell you any more details than that, but we're working a lot closer with the Disc Golf Pro Tour next year. And I think that you'll see it's going to get even bigger. I mean, going international, I think, is a big deal. You know, there's never been an international amateur tour like this. So.
80 days until the national championship as we record this, so I guess by the time people are listening, 79 days or so. Dave, you're certainly busy. I appreciate you taking out some time to talk. And again, congratulations. You got a lot going on right now.
Yeah, I do. I'm teaching 4 clinics a week, so follow me on Facebook if you want to do one. I got, you know, I'm doing Des Moines tonight, Columbia, Missouri Tuesday, Joplin, Missouri Wednesday, Emporia Thursday, Kansas City the following Monday, Cleveland the following Tuesday. So, you know, come on out. it's a great thing. I'm back to teaching people. I really enjoy teaching and follow the NG Tour. And, you know, everybody supported me through the Masters Worlds, from my sponsors like Latitude 64 to all the NG sponsors. Really appreciate it. You know, it's the reason I do it now. It's more for pride. It isn't about money. So everybody out there, thank you so much for your good words. And keep supporting disc golf and supporting things like PDJ Radio, because we're getting somewhere. It doesn't seem like it, but we are.
Well, thanks, Dave. And again, if you need if you want some information on the Next Generation Disc Golf Tour, just hit up nextgendiscgolf.com. That was 2018 Pro Masters World Champion Dave Fellberg. Dave, thanks for your time. Safe travels.
Thanks, Steve. Appreciate
it. Take care. Joining the show now, we have Nick Stefanko and John Erickson. They are from Santa Cruz and Berkeley, California, respectively. And they're going to be setting up disc golf out at Burning Man in the coming week. Guys, thanks for joining the show today.
Happy to be here.
Thanks for having us.
So, I gotta have a little background here. How long have you guys been going to Burning Man? And really, like, for people who don't know what Burning Man is, give us a quick, like, distillation of the event.
So, my first year was 2009. And I've been going every year since, except last year I actually took a break. And then Nick,
my first year was 2011, and last year I also took a break.
And the best way to describe Burning Man is kind of, it's the best worst time ever. It's in the middle of the desert. There's a reason things don't live there. It sucks. But everybody who goes and participates brings the things that they enjoy most and is more than happy to, share that with everybody. So if you've ever wanted to do something, say, like surfing, there's someone that will actually get you to surf on the playa. And, you know, obviously there aren't waves, but they're going to have something like a mountain board and a big rope and a couple of people with a big blue tarp, and they'll pull someone and then pull the tarp over them like they're going through a barrel of a wave. or people decide to do things like bring a disc golf course to the middle of the desert for some odd reason.
Well, I mean, that sounds awesome. How long have you guys been doing disc golf there for? Last year, you didn't do it, correct?
Correct. So my first year was 2009, and 2010 was first year for disc golf.
And how did that, I mean, what's it manifested in? I know you guys have like a name for the course. What's the layout like? How many holes, baskets? How do you get everything there?
funny you're talking about getting everything there. We're having some transportation logistics problems today, but we're figuring it out. Big van is the summation of how we get it there.
Some years we've used a big, huge trailer, gone in with a couple camps to transport all of our infrastructure out there.
But, so, I mean, when I went out there my first year, I brought all my discs, and one of my friends brought all his discs, and, you know, we were like, oh, there's, 50,000 hippies, and hippies love Frisbee, there's probably some disc golf. And so, we go wandering around with our bags, and we try to figure out and find disc golf, and we can't find anything. So what we ended up doing was just picking random art and saying, oh, that one's par three, or hey, okay, so this one you have to go around the corner and
classic
for that piece
object,
of art, and that's
object
yeah
golf.
Exactly, just hit stuff. It was pretty fun. But then one of the nights wandering around, I came across there's a mini golf course, and I'm watching everyone like actually put the clubs back and actually put the balls back and like not break stuff. I was like, all right, well, I guess I'll just bring a disc golf course.
I love it. So how many holes do you guys have? What are you taking out, like full baskets? Are they like travelers? How's the setup here?
Well, over the years, the course started off with just like piece together, we call them trash baskets, like whatever material we could find, PVC and netting, and that was the first run for the course.
Yeah,
but we've been able to add some like real practice baskets to it with a couple little like artful takes on a few of them, just to fit with the theme of Burning Man. and we've been developing more and more obstacles to add to our footprint, make the course a little more challenging. We've latched on to the idea of a mushroom forest to accentuate the course. We have little paper mache mushrooms that we've attached fur to. We have some larger mushrooms that we build out of PVC. We used to have some ones made out of wood, but had a fun little burn of those a couple of years ago.
Yeah, the first couple of baskets I built were just like conduit going into cinder blocks for and concrete for, you know, anchoring them, and then using things like bike tires and chains and just building them all weird and funhouse mirror style because didn't have the budget to like also put obstacles out. But then, yeah, as Nick was saying, you know, we've slowly added more baskets, like actual baskets. Most of them are practice baskets. We do have one like full like tournament basket. And then we have a bunch of mini baskets. It actually turns out this year we have 11 full-size baskets and 7 mini baskets. So we're actually up to 18 holes this year. One of our holes that's going to be new this year is we're putting it on the back of an electric golf cart, and it's going to be a moving target.
I love it. So how do the discs handle the desert conditions? I mean, is everything – my one experience with Burning Man, I've never been there, but a few years back I was driving back from Tahoe the same weekend Burning Man ended, and there was this white film of silt on every vehicle that was coming out. So how do the discs hold up? Does everything get beat up pretty well, or have you guys, you know, figured out how to manage the conditions?
You know, the dust hasn't really seemed to like degrade the plastic or warp it at all. Everything works pretty well. One of the things I do every year is have a special design put together, and we get a bunch of discs printed with that design. So, you know, we gift away pretty much all the discs. We run a couple tournaments, and we make everyone play with those exact discs. They're usually like mid-ranger putters. So, like, you know, pro can't show up with his bag and just bomb every hole and, you know, destroy the tournament. But, yeah, it can be some of the worst golf you've ever played. You're going for a 10-foot putt, and then the wind picks it up, and now you're 300 feet. So, yeah, it can be pretty brutal.
So you're doing a little more than hippies just throwing frisbees here. Like, you guys are organized. You're doing a full-on event.
Yeah, yeah. This year we have 3 tournaments. First one is on 2-2 Tuesday. At 10 a.m. it's our wonderful day tournament, and you know, we're gonna run that one. The next one is really fun. It's our night tournament, Wednesday at 8:30 p.m. and everything's all lit up. We have LEDs for the discs, and that one takes a lot of effort from everybody in camp to make sure that all the participants are, say, going the right direction, or other people walking around don't see blinking disc on the ground and be like, ooh, that looks shiny, I want to take that. And then we added a new tournament this year, which I've now called the Tournament of Champions. And that one is Sunday, the last day after the man burns, at 7 a.m. So it's going to be a Sunday morning doubles tournament, and we'll see who's up and going. But my plan is to basically be out there ready with my megaphone, being an asshole, and see who shows up.
How many people would you guys estimate end up playing while you're there?
I mean, hundreds. Tournaments we usually have, we've had 60 to 80 people for tournaments, but then just like the course is open 24/7 and we have discs out, and just like people are playing all the time.
Yeah, so maybe what, like 1,500 people, 2,000 people, something like that. We've been getting larger numbers every year.
Yeah, not really. I have no clue how many people actually play, because, you know, obviously we're not in camp necessarily all the time, but like people are always coming and picking up discs and playing.
Well, last thing before I let you guys go, because I know you do have to get on the road soon. It seems to me, just in listening to you guys, that disc golf and Burning Man and just the spirit of the game, everything works together really well. Is that kind of how you guys feel? Is this just bringing the spirit of disc golf and the spirit of Burning Man together?
I would say yes. Like, the entire spirit of Burning Man is community and, you know, showcasing to the community something that you're passionate about here in the default world and being able to share our love of disc golf with people there. We get pros from all over that show up. We talk with them through our Facebook group. And we also meet people that have never seen a disc before. They pick it up. They're like, what's this? Show me what's going on right here. And we'll walk them through playing a couple holes, and they'll be super stoked and happy to have done it.
Well, if you guys end up having any pictures or video or anything afterwards, please share them with us. We'd love to see them. It sounds like such a unique experience.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Well, thank you guys. Thank you guys again. That was Nick Stefanko and John Erickson. They're heading out to Burning Man and setting up some disc golf. Guys, be sure to stay hydrated and travel safe.
Absolutely. And if anybody's going to Burning Man, we are located at 230 and G.
Perfect. Well, thank you guys. Travel safely. We'll be back here in just a moment on PDGA Radio. Sarah, how long do you think you would survive out at Burning Man?
Well,
could you do the full like week long out in the desert?
Absolutely. So I've done things like Bonnaroo, but that sounds like pretty cushy compared to Burning Man.
I think so.
and All Good Festival, but I had VIP camping, so it's probably not possible.
I don't think they have VIP camping at Burning Man, so.
Yeah, maybe a couple days. What's the bathroom and shower situation like?
No idea. No idea.
Yeah, that might be the deal breaker for me.
My only experience with Burning Man is like people driving back from it, and there's just a white film on their car from all the sand. It's pretty wild. So yeah. cool that they're gonna have disc golf out there though, and like it's perfect. That seems like a perfect match. So I'm really looking forward to seeing any photos and stuff we get from there. Sarah, before we end the show, we're gonna debut a new segment. We're gonna call this one the comment section. Now, normally the comment section of any article is generally the worst place to hang out.
Mm-hmm.
We're going to do our best to make this not the worst place or the worst segment of the show. But,
or
you know.
The worst that it's so bad that it's good.
Oh, well, that could be. I don't know. Okay. But basically, we're just going to, Sarah and I are just going to, you know, we're people, we're disc golfers, and sometimes we have opinions on things, and we might like to share them, especially when there's some interesting conversations going on around the sport. So that's where the comment section comes in. This is also the time where we give our disclaimer that these are just our opinions. They don't reflect any official standings of the PDGA or our other employers or sponsors or anything like that. We're just chit-chatting and being fans of disc golf right now. So, Sarah, the first thing I want to bring up, Steve Dodge and the Disc Golf Pro Tour, they had kind of a live roundtable discussion last week about should we make baskets smaller? I guess the idea being, you know, putting is too easy in disc golf, which I disagree with. If putting were easier in disc golf, I think I'd be out there a bit more. But what's your take on that, Sarah? Smaller baskets, yes or no?
Okay, so I have played golf before. I'm not even sure you could call it playing golf. I've attempted to hit balls with clubs before into those tiny little holes. And if you just think about ball golf and the putting, it is so much harder because you're not only going up against wind and angle and all of those things, but you've also got to read the slope and the length of the grass and all these other things. So when you compare it to ball golf, I think it is way easier. And I think the other argument is that if disc golf baskets were smaller, then you wouldn't see so many people shooting like 14, 15 down on these courses that are arguably some of the hardest in the world.
So does that mean you're okay? You would want smaller baskets?
I mean, as a competitor, no, I do not want smaller baskets, but I could see the argument. Like I've got one of those,
like the little skill shot or marksman whatever.
Yeah. The bullseye basket in the backyard. And it does help you be able to visualize where you need to hit in the heart of the chains of a regular basket. But I think aces would be fewer and far between. I don't know, those putts that you don't think that are going to go in, but the last chain on the left grabs it and pulls it into the basket. Those won't happen anymore. So it may just cause more frustration. but I think it would help, maybe not help, it would make the sport evolve into people having to be more accurate with their putting, obviously. So I don't know. I'm wishy-washy about it. I think if I didn't play golf professionally, I think I may have a stronger stance on it, but just knowing some of my putting struggles that I experience sometimes, I wouldn't want to shoot myself in the foot like that.
Sure. I don't play golf professionally, so I will take a stance on it. But as someone who enjoys watching disc golf, and trust me, I'll be the first one to say, like, that is something that's a very distinct difference between watching golf and watching disc golf. Golf, you have a lot of tension when someone's putting, and you have that slow roll toward the pin, and the entire crowd's like, they're gasping and holding their breath to see if it goes in. That is something that is uniquely missing from disc golf, and it would be great if we could somehow replicate that. I don't think a smaller basket does replicate that, because we're still throwing a projectile at a certain speed. My concern with if we did make the basket smaller is that I think that people who are maybe not as confident in putting might just end up laying up more instead of going for the longer shots. Now, it would make those ones that are longer shots drop in. It would certainly up the impressive factor on them. But, like, you know, I'm still looking at some stats and things that we have like that. And, you know, when we've got people with, like, 85% putting and 90% putting, I mean, it's still good, but that's not the only reason why they're winning. And personally, my other thing with it is, okay, so we make smaller baskets for, you know, professional events, because I think that's where this is going, for like a certain tier of events. I mean, I don't know. I would want kids coming up in the sport to practice on the size that the pros would play, so that we could eventually be, you know, getting more kids to play disc golf and be excited about it. And there's already millions of baskets in the ground that are built to a certain standard. So, I don't know. At the same time, it could be intriguing. I think it would be fun as an experiment for, like, one or two, like, X-tier events. I think that would be enjoyable. I think you could really hype it up and be like, hey, and I think the proposals they were talking about weren't even, like, the marksman or bullseye baskets. It was like bringing them down to like two-thirds size or something like that. Something of a different proportion. But I just think there are some logistics that maybe won't be as, you know, as easy to iron out. And I mean, as much as we see, you know, you've got the top 10 guys smashing it, you know, with inside the circle, you know, you can move down to, you get outside the top 10 and I don't know, it's the putting drops off a little bit. So it's not like everyone is this massively elite putter. I don't know. That's just my
take. I agree.
I could see the intrigue for it. So it'll be interesting to see if Steve Dodge is cooking something up on the Pro Tour and trying to, you know, do something a little bit different.
Yeah, I would be totally open to playing an event, as maybe not a sanctioned event, but an event on smaller baskets.
Well, there was the disc dash for cash that did it a couple years ago. There's a video of it on YouTube, and they played on those like Dynamic Discs marksman baskets, and you know, it wasn't always pretty, but it was different. It was interesting, and I think it's good to have different and interesting. I just don't know that I would personally want that as the standard. That's all I'm saying. One more spot from the comments section, Sarah. Steve Brinster, 2013 USDGC champion, put out a fairly long Facebook post. I don't know if it's public or not. But essentially what it boiled down to was he was talking about disc golf's history and how he feels it needs to be tied more to set majors, like in golf or tennis, and how he would like to see a big four, which really translated to five, because you have he wanted Worlds, USDGC and US Women's, a European Open, and a PDGA Championship. So he would want five pro majors, and having the PDGA add $50,000 to each of those majors as a way to kind of boost the sport and really give it a foundation from which to build more history. I think there are some good ideas in this post. I think there are some ideas that maybe are a little bit, I don't know, I don't want to say short-sighted. I don't think short-sighted is the right word, but I think maybe that the realities aren't all the way there, Sarah. But first of all, just give me your unvarnished thoughts. 5 pro majors and $50,000 each from the PDGA to each one. Do you see something like that happening?
I think it would be great. I mean, that's great as far as a wish list item, but thinking about the logistical operations side of it, I mean, I think of myself as a TD. I run a big event, definitely not as big as Worlds, but TDs get burnt out, especially when they are under a lot of pressure and have to get sponsorships, and they're hosting big pro events where there's hotels involved and convention bureaus and all these different things around their city. And I could just see that, yes, maybe a major would happen for 4 or 5 years in a particular location. And then what happens if that TD gets burnt out and he's like, he or she's like, I don't want to do this anymore. So there goes that historical aspect of it. You can't really depend on a tournament just running for the rest of time. That's
sure.
I don't think that's really realistic. And then, of course, I don't know what the PDGA's budget is because I don't work for the PDGA, but I have no idea if that's even doable. I mean, that sounds like a great number in theory, but is that something that's even realistic for them just to take money from other places of their budget and just throw it into pro disc golf where they're already putting a lot of money?
I think the budget for tour events, PDGA tour events, is already up over $300,000, I believe.
Yeah.
And the other part of it is, you know, by and large, the vast majority of PGA members are amateurs. And so you have to think, okay, do the big base of players want that to be where the funds are allocated? Are all of the amateur members of the PDGA aiming to become pros that they will one day be aiming for this legacy about? I don't know. I 100% agree that history is an important backbone of any sport. There is a lot of history in disc golf. It is not super well documented everywhere, though. It's just, it's hard. I think people forget that disc golf is still very young. I mean, we're talking about a sport that came up in the 60s and 70s with organized competitions. We haven't been around that long. And so I think we can still do some more on the infrastructure front in terms of, you know, maybe we need to figure out, like, get an official history down, you know, whether it's in a documentary form or a book or something like that, of try and nail down the real big history of disc golf. Then from there, you do have majors. You have Ken Climo, 12-time world champion. You have Paul McBeth, 4-time world champion. Elaine King, 5-time world champion. You know what I mean? So I think the idea that we maybe don't have a historical backbone is a little bit off. I just think it's not as developed as a sport like golf or tennis, because those things come with time. So I like the idea of trying to boost the majors, but I personally would like to see maybe $50,000 times 5 being put toward, you know, educational programs, building up the base of the sport, getting more kids to play, things like that. But the thing that I did really like about Steve Brinser's post, and that I give him a lot of credit for, is it was respectful. It wasn't just a big, long rant like you sometimes get on social media. It was addressed toward other people. And by and large, most people were being very respectful in the comments, even if they didn't agree with the concept. So,
yeah, there's definitely a way to pose questions on social media that are not combative or elicit aggressive.
There is?
Comments.
I didn't know that.
I mean, I haven't figured out how to do it, but Steve Brinster has, so... Props to him for doing it in like a professional way that didn't elicit any aggression or pissed off people.
Yeah, no, and I think I think we handled it in a professional fashion as well, Sarah. So good job, first time in the comment section. We didn't turn into We didn't turn into trolls after one go at it, so that's good.
Give it a few weeks.
A few weeks. The season is young. Sarah, this time next week, you and I are going to be recording at Pro Worlds in Vermont. Scale of 1 to 10, how excited are you?
I'm at 11.
Yes. Thank you for the Spinal Tap reference. I was hoping you'd do that, because if you didn't...
Spinal what?
Going
I'm just
to...
kidding.
Yeah,
I'm
right. Just kidding. No, we're going to be in Vermont next week. We're going to record together for once.
Yeah.
We're going to have to figure out if we're going to have like people come drop in, if we're going to get a little looser. And like, have...
Oh,
I'm
God.
Sure. We're going to figure out
I might
format.
Need a lot of maple syrup for that.
Yeah. No, you'll be fine. But we're looking forward to it. We'll have a whole Worlds preview show. We'll make our picks. Oh, we're going to make
Speaking
some other
of
picks right now real quick. But yes. Worlds preview show next week. We'll make our picks. We'll talk about how you can follow the event. We'll have more information coming out about that on PDGA.com this week, because the World Championships are upon us. And with that comes mixed doubles and field events before Pro Worlds. Now, those are mostly going to be going on Monday, so before we really have a chance to record this. So Sarah and I are going to make some picks. We've got mixed doubles, we've got long drive, and we've got putting. So, Sarah, I guess I get the picks first, because you had the picks last week for
me. And let me just make a note here that I got zero. Yes, I'm beating Steve in points, but I got 0 points last week. That
is a first. I think you got zero. Eagle still finished in the top 10, so you get like 2 points for him being eighth.
Okay.
They win. Remember, it's
Yeah, but I thought it went all the way to top five. All right, fine. I got a couple points.
You got a couple points.
Thanks.
You got fewer points than normal. Yeah, good job.
Yeah.
All right. So I'm looking at the doubles list.
All right. And I already know who you're gonna pick.
Go ahead. Make my pick for me.
All right. Your pick is Paige Bjorkas and Kevin Jones.
I was thinking about it just because they can crush, but like, it's at Brewster Ridge, which isn't as much of a crusher course. It's
yeah,
more,
but Paige Bjorkas.
It's more of a.
But Paige Bjorkas.
I know, and really, I'm just trying.
And
to,
Kevin Jones.
I'm just
played.
Trying to string you out here. That was gonna be my pick. So
I know.
I'm taking it. Who are you gonna take? Are you gonna take Double G and Jessica Weiss?
I was strongly considering it. I
that
actually
gonna
am gonna go. Idea. I'm gonna go Katrina Allen and Austin Hannum.
Yeah, that's a good pick too.
Yeah, they're a good power couple. Not that Weiss and Double G aren't, but
and also not all of these players are power couples, by the way.
Correct.
I don't think many of them are, actually. Elaine King and Matt Dahl are playing together.
I know.
That's awesome.
I know.
That's
I'm looking at the list here.
There's gonna be some fun. There's gonna be some fun pairings there.
Lisa Fakus. Oh, here we go. Here's the best putting team: Lisa Fakus and Matt Bell.
World champion of 2015, 2016 putting. Matt Bell.
Something like that. I want to say 15. I want to say 15.
Yeah.
And Lisa Fakus is, she might still be number one on UDisc overall season putting.
Yeah. All right. So those are our picks for mixed doubles at Brewster Ridge on Monday. Next, we're going to go with the putting competition. Last year, the winners of putting were Jessica Weiss and Anthony Barella.
Yeah.
Surprisingly enough. So
wait, do you get to go first on all of these then? I guess
I mean,
fair.
If you're willing to concede that I can go next week for proper Worlds,
nah.
You can go first on some.
Go ahead.
Okay. So, gosh, I'm going to start on the women's side for putting, and I'm going to take Lisa Fakus because she's a boss. So, and for on the men's side, I mean, I want to take Ricky. I want to take Eagle. But then I see Josh Anthon. And that dude can putt. I'm going to go with him.
All right. Man, the women's side's a little slim. There's only 10.
Yeah. I don't see Sarah Lamerson on this list. It's unfortunate.
No, we've talked about this. I have a thing called a job.
No,
and
no,
I can't take a lot of days off. So,
well, you know.
Well, actually, this is Monday, right? So this is actual Labor Day.
Could probably do it. Probably get into it.
Yeah, but I'll be practicing courses then. So, anyway, I'm going to go.
I don't have Jeopardy music, so you're gonna have to speed this pickup.
I know. I'm gonna go Des Redding.
That's a good one.
Yeah.
Okay, and who you got on the men's side?
All right, the men's side. I did not study this beforehand. I'm going James Conrad.
Oh, all right. Well, yeah. He's got the hot hand right now.
He's pretty good at that.
Neither of us picked Ricky or Eagle. What are we thinking?
I don't know.
They're very good putters. All right, and then long drive competition. Last year, Paige Pierce won the women's side. She's back in it this year. And on the men's side, David Wiggins, world distance champion, won. He's also back in it this year. Yep. I get first pick out of the women's side. I'm definitely taking Paige. That one's too easy.
Come on.
And
there's only four women.
I know.
This is not even fair.
Well, this is what you get for being first all season. Now, here's the men's
first
side.
First all season. Right.
The men's side, like, is really tough to pick. You got James Conrad, Seppa Paiu, Garrett Gerthy, Kevin Jones, Drew Gibson, and then, like, Avery Jenkins. And a
I don't
bunch
see
of
what's so hard
just,
about that.
All those dudes can smash. I'm gonna take Seppo.
Oh,
I've
okay.
watched Seppo Paiu throw a lot of discs this year, very far. I'm going with Seppo Paiu.
All right, fine. I'm gonna go Haley King on the women's side.
Okay,
she's a crusher, and I'm gonna go Garrett Gerthy on the men's side.
All right, so those are our picks. Put them down. No one, none of those people will win. Now we curse them all. I'm sorry.
Oh no. Hopefully not.
I hope not either. All right, that's gonna do it for our show this week. But we'll back next week. What?
We need to make one last plug for the this month's PDGO Radio Challenge.
That is correct.
Which was throwing an entire hole, and this is really easy, guys. On Instagram, all you have to do, give your phone to a friend and have them hold down the video button, and you can just do their hole in segments. So hold it down. Get their drive, lift your finger off, and then you can do the entire hole. We've got, I think, six people who have submitted their hilarious videos of throwing with their opposite hand, myself included. If you'd like to watch it, check out the hashtag PDGO Radio Challenge. And wait till you get to the putting part of my hole.
It's going to be good, I bet. I'm gonna do my best to get out there this week. If not, maybe I'll, I don't know. Hopefully I can get out there.
At the end of the month, we will do a random drawing of everyone who submitted a post, and you will win something cool. So get out there and do it.
Yeah, maybe I'll bring back some stuff from Worlds to send to people.
Oh, that'd be cool.
So, all right. Now I think we're done with the show. Thank you for listening. As always, hit us up with some feedback, radio@pdga.com. Subscribe on your favorite podcasting app. And please be sure to tune in next week. We will be at Smuggler's Notch in Vermont for the World Championship. We could not be more excited. Sarah, I will see you there.
Yeah, I'll see you in a few days.
All right.
Safe travels.
Yeah, thank you. You too. Until then, that was Sarah Lamerson. I'm Steve Hill. This was PDGA Radio, and we'll talk to you next week. Take care.